Anything catch man me clean for me gun. Anything catch man me clean for me gun. Anything catch man me clean for me gun. Anything catch man me clean for me gun.
Brooktown is Black Moon and Smith and Wesson. Pick up the pace, cause we're right behind your back. The pump got X amount of shots. Take one to your back. Booyah guy, Mr. Ripper did the shooting. Cops heard the shot, shit's hot, cause they're pursuing. But it's my stomping ground where herbs get blown down. Think of getting caught by beasts, you the damn clown. Check the drums of death as I break what's left for your face. Cause you're selling out the rap race. Your family cries as your body lies.
Well,
shout out to Detroit Free Press or whatever the hell Eric's team name was.
Wasn't it like his Plumber Carter, wasn't it? I don't know.
No. It was like it was something like Detroit Free Press or something like that.
He was like a big like whatever. It doesn't matter. Yeah. We digress, and it's only like 10 seconds into our spoken podcast.
So, Mood scale, right here. I got a Bad News Ramen. This is better have my donuts.
Look at you with your professional intro right there, dude. Wow, look at that.
You know, I've been
you've been practicing?
Watching you do it for, you know, 100 and some odd episodes, so I can get it going.
You sure?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. So, you know, while, you know, this is a wrestling podcast, and we do delve into other things from time to time, I want to go into a topic that we really never get into, because there was a milestone reached by your boy, one Ichiro Suzuki today.
Doesn't count.
Well, that was what I wanted to.
Okay.
Like, yeah, so he surpassed Pete Rose in terms of professional hits today, and then that was kind of the big debate about it: is he considered the Hit King or not? Because 1,000+ of those were in Japan.
Do we live in a world where sports people have nothing to talk about except for something as stupid as this? It doesn't count, dude. I mean, the whole thing is like, is the Negro Leagues, the hits, are those counted? No, they're not.
No.
Yeah, I mean, if it's a case where if Ichiro falls short of getting 3,000 hits in Major League Baseball, which I hope that isn't the case, because I only think he has like maybe
40 or something like
40
that.
More hits or something like that. I think it's a case where if he doesn't get the 3,000 hits in Major League Baseball, then I think his past accomplishments when he played in the Japanese leagues should be put into account. But Ichiro probably had like probably one of the best maybe 7 to 10 year run of any hitter. But I don't know, dude. I think. I'm getting kind of tired of just media in general, right? Like the instant gratification of and people need talking points to talk about. And so you have like, you know, one guy going to say like, oh yeah, you know, he should be considered. And the guy's like, oh no, he shouldn't. Oh, the world's going to end. I mean, come on, dude. It's dumb.
Well,
it's just dull.
I think the thing that makes it even funnier is like they use this as a debate topic, but nobody is arguing that, that Ichiro is the all-time Hit King, right? So it's like, what do you, you know, they get two people that are up there, you know, saying each other's side, but everyone still agrees Pete Rose is the Hit King. So why are you even, like, bringing up the question if nobody even thinks that's the case?
I don't even think Ichiro is bringing up that he's the Hit King. I don't think anybody in baseball that plays in Major League Baseball is bringing that up. I think it's just a contrived thing by the liberal media.
The liberal media.
That's the other problem I have, too. I mean, I think it's just kind of the whole thing is this. People, you know, with the media, the way people ingest media, like everything that happened in Orlando with the shooting and stuff. And then I have like probably like 5 or 10% of my like Facebook friends like start talking about the liberal media and, you know, gun control and stuff. And it's like, well, and this is on both sides, right? Like, first of all, when I say liberal media, I'm joking because I was part of the media. And if wanting to hear all sides of an issue or all sides or all reaction of a certain point that happens in history, if that's liberal, then that's pretty sad, right? And that's pretty sad that people are against that. But that's on a whole other thing. You know, to bring in gun control, to I mean, there was even like they were talking about like Wounded Knee, right? And to bring that in, and then to bring in media, and then I have another guy saying like, oh, you know, the misconception of automatic weapons, and there's no automatic weapons sold in the United States. They're semi-automatic, this and this. I was like, do you seem to forget that like 50 people died? I mean, 50 people died, and that's all that matters. So that's, it's just, you do that, you have that, and it's just sports talk about sports talk about sports talk. It's just like, dude, I'm like, you're killing me right now, man. You know, you know, I don't know what else to say, dude. You know, I mean, it's like, you're going to have your hacks, and it seems there's a lot more hacks than there are good radio people, and or just sports media in general. And if you have like, if you just happen to have like two really good radio shows, they have to put them on at the same time, so you're like flipping back and forth. It's like, you know, I liked it when like every segment of like on the radio, because I have to do a lot of driving, so I have to listen to a lot of radio, because you can only listen to your music so much. And it used to be good, is it'd be like Rome, Bruce, and then Tom Tolbert, right? And then Bruce had to mess it up by going over to the FM, and so now it's like I don't even listen to Ted Ramey. Like, I'm such a vanilla cow. I have to listen. It's so bad that I listen to the Hacks Up in Sacramento before I listen to Ted Ramey. So
there's no way I listen to the Hacks Up in Sacramento.
Well, I ain't listening to no Ted Ramey. Well, let me tell you something. I don't want to hear that guy.
Yeah, well,
I ain't trying to hear that.
You have options, because well, I mean, yeah.
Well, Greg Papa gets on my nerves too.
Right.
Now that Lund is no longer a part of his show, it's hardly bearable listening to Greg Papa.
Yeah. Well, I think this week, because I think Papa's in Cleveland, so yeah,
it's been decent. But here's a problem that I have is that I'm in the Monterey Bay, mm-hmm. so I can't get 95.7.
Yeah.
So that's my problem.
Yeah. So I was gonna say they do have Townsend in there, which I love Townie. But the guy who really bothers me more than anybody is Dibley, and Dibley's like the super filling guy now. He's on like two or three shows a day.
Yeah, then, that guy sucks. I think he was the one. So he started bringing up the word bitch, you know, because Draymond called LeBron James a bitch, and then like he was saying that it was like akin to like calling someone like a degrading form of a female. I was like, no, dude. I'm like, the way Draymond. I mean, and here's the thing: is like how do these guys are so out of touch? Because even like I think Tierney a little bit was like misconstruing what Draymond meant by calling LeBron James a bitch. Mm-hmm. He's not calling him a lower form of a female. He's not calling him a female. He's calling him a bitch. LeBron, you are a bitch. That means you cry like a bitch, you complain like a bitch, you flop like a bitch, you are a bitch. That's what that means. So it's just like, how come nobody can say that, right? I'm like, how come you be in such a small little bubble? You gotta tell it like the way it is, man.
Yeah, I mean, like the use of that term. Is,
if you put little in front of it, and that's like the other thing too, right? It's not that hard. It's like basically the way Draymond means when he calls LeBron a bitch is if you put little in front of bitch, he is a little bitch, and that should explain everything.
Yeah, I mean, it's not even if you have achieved to this level of
being a bitch
of being a professional athlete and playing that much sports. I mean, that bitch is about like. The lowest,
bitch, it's
like the
bitch, lowest. Bitch ain't nothing but a word to me.
Right. Well, it's about the lowest form of trash talk.
That was about a female. That song was about a female.
Right. Right. But that's like the lowest form of trash talk. I mean, yeah. Getting insulted by that is pretty damn weak. And the thing is, like, you know, if you know LeBron James, here's where I draw the line, right? There's a lot of times that he acts like a bitch, but like,
what do you mean by court, bitch?
On the court,
yeah,
like,
no, I know, dude.
You know, this guy's the man, right?
Yeah.
So, but here's the thing, like LeBron or Draymond called him a bitch, and then like he got all upset about it. And then the thing is,
that makes him a bitch.
Well, he went into the media and then he acted like a bitch.
Yeah.
And that's like the biggest thing. He basically
and
went,
what,
he
what
went the, self-fulfilling prophecy.
And what did the media do about it? They lapped that stuff up, dude.
Yeah, and then Clay said he got his feelings hurt, and LeBron with that little A-Rod giggle.
Yeah,
that was a bitch giggle too. I'll say that much. So it was more high pitched than the A-Rod one.
Money. Speaking of bitch, money.
Let me talk about the Usos like that.
I'm not, man.
See, that's a degrading whatever of. I don't know, whatever the hell Dibley's talking about. That guy's terrible, dude. I can't stand that guy.
All right. So okay, Moose Scale number 148.
We're out. 10 minutes strong, baby. Well, let's see. We had the... What do you want to go with here? We had the Go Home show leading into...
Is it the Go Home show? Is it this weekend?
Yeah, it's the Sunday.
On Father's Day?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Money in the Bank. So, I thought overall, like, the show was pretty solid. Feel like, you know, there was a... And it's kind of, sometimes you get this with that Go Home show, but there was a lot of, like, advertisements and stuff like that. Like, you know, replaying of old promos for the build. Which is, it's fine, it's whatever. It's not, you know, I just fast forward through it because I've seen it. And, you know, my memory retention is strong. But for the actual stuff, like, I liked the opening. Let me make sure I'm talking about the right thing. So the opening was where they had like all the different contestants for the ladder match, right? So I think that they're doing a really good job building that ladder match, and like the matches that they're having, the spots that they're putting all those guys in. I think it's going pretty well. And then they were able to use them in the main event, like had the match, but like all those surrounding guys, like I think that's going pretty good. You know, for WWE, you know, we've kind of, one of the things that's been a problem is like they in the past they've really focused on like only like the main event storyline. And I thought like this whole build of the last month of, you know, putting those mid card guys that are going to be in that ladder match and like making that story something that's vital to the show, I think they've done a really good job with it. And I think this card looks like
it's going to be a really strong card.
Yeah. So, I think that was good. I think it started off with that. You like the way that,
it's a take home show. Yeah. I mean, program has been fine, but it's like, I'm at the point where it's like, you know, let's just get it done with already. Right. Mm-hmm. I think it really peaked last week, and the I think the only thing that, you know, I really kind of, you know, it's more of a case where I'm watching performers, right? So I mean, like, you know, the New Day's been really good. Enzo and Cass has been really good. I mean, Enzo just cut a killer promo. Just like all of his greatest hits on SmackDown, pretty much. You know,
was that the opening? Was the tag team?
That was a SmackDown. Yeah, SmackDown. I think that was the opening. Okay. Yeah, it was
when they brought out all the teams and stuff.
Yeah. So I mean, here's the thing, like. Enzo is really helping me out in my personal life, just because I have like a 12-year-old daughter who's like starting to act like a teenager, and then I have like my 9-year-old daughter that, like, you know, kind of follows suit and emulates her a little bit. So like I'll say something, and then I just, there's like a ton of eye rolling in my house, right? Like I don't know if I'd say you're lucky, but you don't have to live in a house full of women. Like, you live in a house full of boys, and I know there's differences there, but like with a boy, you could, you know, like your son Logan, right? He mouths off a lot, right? So, but I can always just like knock him in the head, and, you know, and he'll keep on talking, and I'll knock him in the head again. And right at the time I get out of jail, well, guess what? He'll be getting out of your coma. And guess what? I'll knock you out again. So, I mean, but it's different, right? Like, but with girls, you can't really like smack them around. Because, I mean, what does that teach them, right? It kind of teaches them like violence is a cure-all, you know? So what I've resorted to is when I get a lot of the eye rolls, I just kind of look at them and say, couple latest. So Enzo's been he's been the shining light of my sanity for it's been a hard 3-4 months, man. It's been pretty tough.
Times is tough.
Actually, no, it's been a hard year ever since my daughter turned like 12 and started middle school. It's been tough, man. It's been tough. So yeah. All I gotta say is, well, look at what we have here, and I'll tell them that too. Couple latest, and they have no idea what I'm talking about. Couple latest. So that's pretty much it. It's a take home show. Yeah. So I want to get into something, and maybe this is something that you have to do because you have Netflix, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So they have the Jake the Snake Roberts
documentary,
The Resurrection of Jake the Snake, and I watched it last night, and I know you haven't watched it, but you know I'm watching this documentary, and it's kind of like, I want you to comment on the takes that I have here. because I've seen this act before with Jake the Snake, right? And I'm not gonna like say that, you know, he's being fake or whatever. But watching this documentary, I think I've seen two of the documentaries. One was like Beyond the Mat. There's another one where there's another documentary, and he was talking about, you know, what happened to him and stuff, and a lot of bad stuff happened to him. Like, you know, he was sexually abused. You know, he was emotionally abused, physically abused. At least that's what he says, and I believe him when he says that. But you know, he has you know, he struggles with addiction, and mostly it was alcohol, and that was kind of like his whole thing was like alcohol kept on like bringing him back, and you know, and he would do really well. Diamond Dallas Page would leave, and then he'd like go off the pipe and stuff. Well, not off the pipe, but he'd go on the bottle. And just watching this guy, it's like hearing the same thing over and over again about what he says. And it really, he doesn't have a lot of credibility, not because of what he's done in the past, but I really feel like, you know, he's a fan of his own promo, and his promo, you know, at least for that documentary was like, you know, like, he's not worth anything. You know, nobody cares about him. You know, he's a terrible parent. He's a terrible grandfather. You know, he threw his life away, and now, you know, he wants to be there for his kids and all this stuff and everything. It's like, it's the same, like, it's just like, I'm just watching this guy and like hearing people talk, and someone needed to just tell him, hey, you know, dude, just shut the hell up. You know, okay. Yeah. All this stuff happened to you. Right. But the whole thing is that the guy's like such a good promo guy that I think people buy into it. And I probably would have bought into it if I didn't see like these previous ones. Like, he doesn't sound any different from like 10, 15 years ago than he sounds now. And you know, it seems like he is turning his life around. The one that, you know, and they brought in Scott Hall as well, you know, and Scott Hall, like they call him on the phone, and he was kind of living his own promo too. Right. Like, you're just saying like he was having vodka for lunch or vodka for breakfast. And then he went to the house and like, he kind of changed himself, and he stayed there for a while. And then he moved out and helped his like son Cody. He trained with his son Cody, but it seemed like, you know, he affected me a lot more, because I think I like Scott Hall. Like, I mean, I'm a huge Scott Hall fan, and I just kind of felt like when he was first starting to talk to the camera, he was like running his own promo, like promos that he believed in, like, you know. And it's like, yeah, it's really easy. Like, you're very charismatic, and Jake the Snake's very charismatic too. But I saw like a really like major change in Scott Hall, as compared to say Jake the Snake. Like, I felt Jake the Snake was always on the cusp of like going, you know, north or south, because I think he reads his own press clippings. I think he believes his own promos. And I'm not saying that Scott Hall is like, you know, going to be fine forever. I mean, it's a constant fight for both of them every day. But I mean, I just kind of, you know, I don't know if you kind of heard the shtick by Jake the Snake before, but I just get I'm kind of tired of it. I don't know. It's just like, I don't know if the guys are ever going to get better, or just like the state of like, I guess I wanted to see like more of a change. And I don't know if, because everybody was like hailing this like documentary saying like, oh, it's so great. And, you know, the transformation is great. Like, I don't see a transformation, because I think he believes too much in his own promos that he's cutting for this documentary.
Yeah, it'd be hard for me to say, because, you know, I haven't watched it. I've seen a little bit of clips. Like, I did see like the part where they made the phone call to Scott Hall, and they're trying to tell him to come down to the house, and they'll pick him up and all that. Right, that's that one. But I haven't seen any of the older documentaries on Jake, so, you know, I wouldn't really have a reference point. But yeah, I mean, I think generally with addiction and stuff like that, it can only go so far. It is going to be the daily battle, and you can do well, and you can be all well intentioned, and then you can kind of snap and fall back into those habits. So I guess I could see where it wouldn't necessarily seem like it's getting better over a long period of time, because maybe it's like a two steps forward, one step back kind of situation. I mean, but, you know, everything I've heard, it sounds like he's been doing well. Yeah. Ever since he started, you know, working out with DDP.
Well, that's like the point right there, right? Is like, it seems like he's doing well, but that's why, like, I would encourage you to watch it and then like kind of reevaluate it, because it's just like, you know, I think I have like some personal experience in this, because me and my dad were not estranged. Like, I don't think he realized like the depth of like just apathy I felt towards him, because my dad, you know, my parents divorced when I was like 6 months old. And, you know, my mom always, I always had this perception of what my dad was because of my mom. And then, you know, I expected him, I mean, I put him in a bad position because I expected him to like be like a Superman, right? It's like, well, you weren't here for this, you weren't here for that. And I think you kind of know where I'm, you know, like in terms of, because I've told you this before. But like he, you know, if I asked for something, it's like he owed it to me because he wasn't around when I was like, you know, 17, 18, you know, for like 17, 18 years. And it wasn't until I grew up a little bit and was willing to accept him. But like, you know, he would say stuff and he had to grow too. Like he would say stuff and then he wouldn't follow through. And it's just kind of like that whole thing is like, my dad is like naturally charismatic. There's a lot of personality traits that I see that I have that my dad has. And it would really piss me off because I didn't want to be like my dad. But it was just kind of like the thing is like, that's what it sounds like. It sounds like to me, it's like what my dad would have said before I was able to like kind of cut all the BS that he used to say. And I said, I've told him, I said, you know, you're full of it sometimes, you know, it's like, I don't want to hear about this stuff. You know, it's like, I want to hear from you. And that's just like, kind of like the whole thing. It's like, I think it's easy, and I'm not saying that you're doing this because, you know, it's kind of like the same thing, right? It's like kind of what the media perception is. It's like, oh yeah, he's doing all great. It's like, really, you think, I mean, I don't know how you can sit here if you've watched the documentary and say, oh, Jake is doing great. I'm like, I don't, you know, it's like, it's, he needs a lot of help. And I don't think, you know, packaging it up in a nice little hour and a half documentary and like, oh, he's fine now. That's not, dude. He has a long road to go through. And it's like, You can put your stamp on it and say everything's okay. I'm not seeing you personally, but it's like, no, you need to call this stuff out. It's like he has a long road to recovery, and if you want to sit and watch that documentary with rose colored glasses and go like, oh, he's fine, because it makes it easier for you yourself to live, you know, and it makes like, oh, everything's fine now, you know, then you're full of shit. And you really need to kind of look at it and really examine what's going on, because this guy needs a lot more help than what he's not cured, and it's not going to be, he's not going to ride off into the sunset. I mean, I've seen it before, yeah. You know, and well, I've seen it from him.
I wouldn't think that he's ever going to be cured, right? I mean, that's kind of the definition of a daily battle, right? So yeah, I wouldn't think, even if I saw it and I liked what I saw, I wouldn't ever go so far to say, okay, he's cured now. And again, I didn't see it, so I'm not even saying that. All I'm saying is, like, from the stuff that I heard, that it sounded like he was doing better now.
He's doing better, yeah.
I mean, I'd say I think there's something to be said for the fact that he's alive, right? Because many of his contemporaries were gone long ago, and you know, and we talked about that a few times here. But like, I'm very happy that like a lot of these guys are still around, and we didn't have like, you know, there's still wrestlers die like, you know, pretty early, and you hear them often and whatnot. But it's not like, you know, there was a point there in like the in the mid '90s when it's like every week, you know, this guy died, that guy died, overdose, suicide. And
the support system wasn't there. I think, right, there's a bigger support system now. And that's a good thing with like social media, right?
Right. And I think also very easily, like, I mean, you would never think that, you know, you would think Jake the Snake would have been one of those guys, right? And even to a point, Scott Hall, right? And so the two of them, the fact that they're still around, like, and I do, well, you know, same thing, like, you know, I've heard Scott Hall's doing really well. Like, I follow him, you know, on Twitter, so... You know, I think, you know, I mean, you know, not like I really know him because I follow him on Twitter, but like he seems to be in a good place, right? You know, I'm just glad that they're around and have the opportunity to, you know, improve themselves. So, you know, I probably should have time to go in. Actually, I think I'm gonna dive in and watch that that OJ documentary, but I think through the summary, if it's on Netflix, then yeah, I'll get a chance and take a look at that. Is that the resurrection of Jake the Snake? Is that what it's called? Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah, I'll check that out sometime this summer. Since I do have about 2.5 months on my hand right now.
There we go. There it is.
Yeah. So, let's see. I want to talk about like something that, you know, I'm going to go back to the wrestling. And something that has just been, like, slightly bothering me. This will probably be a little quick topic and then go on to something else. But the club, right? I don't like this. I don't like that name, man. Like, just the club. It sounds kind of corny.
What is the club? Oh, is that that's the like oh the Bullet Club? Yeah. Okay.
So like, I mean,
it's so hot right now that it took me a while to figure out what it is.
Right. Well, I mean, it's like, you know, I get it and I know what it is and like
it's like the kid when six
yeah.
when
exactly. six exactly
it's the kid.
Yeah. I'm like, I don't know, like it should have been. I mean, I understand you want to keep with that theme of club, but just the club. It seems like, you know, we're not going to put any time into thinking about what this is. It's like, dude, you got like a really good angle with like some really good performers, and you're putting them into, you know, at least for the moment, pretty important storylines and matches. Like, you can't come up with something better than the club. Sounds like something like I want to put on my steering wheel in the 90s. You know what I mean?
Or the Hair Club for Men.
Yeah, or like 50 Cent.
That's a good song.
That's a good song, yeah. but like. That's what I'm thinking, like, when I hear the club.
I think of, whenever I hear the club, I think of, like, Finn Balor, right? It's like, when are they going to bring this guy up? You know, like, this guy's ready to join the club.
Yeah, well,
maybe you just put, like, you know, country club, you know? The WWE country club, they can come out with, like, sweaters and polo shirts and stuff. Kind of like the Mean Street Posse did, you know?
Yeah.
That would work. That would look good.
That would go well with the gas mask on Homeboy's front of his singlet.
Has there been a better transition by like a team that has never been the WWE that you're seeing from Guns N' Gals right now? Especially like with both of these guys are really good on the mic, and you haven't even touched the surface of what these guys can do on the mic, and probably in the ring as well.
Well, Gallows has been in WWE before.
Yeah, but I'm talking about, like, the team.
Yeah, of the three, like, on the whole of those three guys. Yeah, I mean, they've done a pretty good job. And I feel like Gallows is leading more of the promos than Anderson is.
You know, which is kind of funny, because, I mean, Anderson was so, like,
yeah.
You know, we want to talk about the architect. I mean, he was the Bullet Club.
Right. So, and that's the thing, like, I think in the ring he's been kind of expanding out and doing, you know, some more of what he did in New Japan. But as a character, they're really not doing much with him. And like, even back to Raw, right? Like, you know, they have, like, the AJ Styles promo or even, like, maybe it was on SmackDown when they had all three of them out there and AJ is doing the talking. You know, I thought AJ's promo was reasonable, you know, comparing it to an AJ Styles promo. But Carl Anderson is a very good promo, and I think they might want to look into, I don't know if they're, like, holding him back in there, like, at this point. Like, not holding him back, like, they're trying to bury him, but, like, if they're slow playing, like, when...
I don't think they know what they have with him. You know, I think they know. Here's what this is my theorem. This is my postulate. I think they saw him and saw him as a main guy in Bullet Club in New Japan, and I think that they don't want to add a strong person like that to the mix, because I think that if they give him the freedom that he had in New Japan, he's going to start overshadowing the people that they want to push. And I really think that's what it is. And If AJ is the benefactor of that, so he can fall 1-2-3 to John Cena, or just, like, give us a glimpse, and John Cena can beat him during SummerSlam, you know, I don't know. I mean, everything's fine right now. I mean, it's like the product is, you know, you're asking about, like, the take-home show. The product is so good in terms of the diverse group of talent that they have, mm-hmm. that... John Cena isn't like the, you know, if I have to sit through like a John Cena segment, it doesn't piss me off because I know that I'll have like four or five other really good segments, you know, after that will be good. So I will give them credit for their shows are run the right way. Like, they're really deep and they're showcasing that depth of talent that they have.
Yeah. And I think they have to, considering that they'll be doing that brand split here in the next couple
of weeks. So is that going to be like an NXT brand split? Is it going to be NXT? Or
so, no. Raw and SmackDown are going to have separate rosters.
Yeah.
So they haven't specified what's going to happen with the NXT guys.
I was just asking because it's, you know, like the pay-per-view was like, or the, you can't even call it a pay-per-view, but their big show at the end.
Yeah.
I didn't know if that was like the end of NXT or.
Well, they call it the end of the beginning, right? So I think, if anything, I think my guess is that it has something to do with this brand split coming up, and then that those guys are going to start being on NXT, but also on like either SmackDown or Raw. That's just kind of what I'm guessing. And then think maybe they're just kind of saying like, you know, this is the end of that beginning phase of NXT, and then they're going to go forward into whatever NXT is about to become. So let's watch that show.
Yes, let's talk about that.
Let's go. Because I was about talk about them.
It was another good show. It wasn't as good as the show before WrestleMania, but same thing. I mean, you know, that first match. I think that first match just really
the tag match.
It wasn't. There's a match before that. It was.
Pretty sure. Oh yeah, Dillinger and
that was just terrible. I mean, that was just like a match that should have been like a dark match, right?
And why do you say that was terrible?
Because I don't even remember it. I mean, I mean, the guy comes out. I'm like, what the hell is this? And I'm like, yeah, no, I'm not watching this. So, do you have to give me some background on it or what?
Well, I'll give you, this is to be the background. So Ty Dillinger's been in there for quite a while. He's the perfect 10. He's just come out with that gimmick in the last, say, 6 months. I think he's kind of their one of their high-end jobbers of NXT. I actually kind of like Ty Dillinger. I think he's entertaining enough. His gimmick's stupid.
Who is he facing?
He was Andrade Cien Almas.
Yeah, see, that was a guy I had a problem. I didn't have a problem with Dillinger. It was the other guy I had a problem
okay,
with.
So, I want to get into this too then. So I kind of like Ty Dillinger, and I've been kind of enjoying him over the, like, with this new version of him, this Perfect 10. I think it's a good gimmick, right? So this guy, Almas, so that was his, like, debut match.
Yeah.
So he's from, he's been signed from, like, AAA. He was known as La Sombra, and he was in...
Look at you, you're reminding me of Mike Tenay right now, dude.
Well, he's in that group, that heel faction with... Naito, that Ignoborables or whatever it is,
which makes Naito like somewhat a little bit more enjoyable to watch.
I like Naito.
Yeah.
So I
like him a little bit better now. But right. Yeah.
So then he was signed and he's been in there developmental for a while. So I think that was his. I'm pretty sure that was his debut match. So I kind of agree. Like, so I'll say, I like that. I think his look is good, like, and saying that, I'm glad they didn't just go and, like, let's just throw some random luchador mask on him and this and that, right? But, so, did you watch NXT today?
I did not.
So, those two guys did the rematch.
I was watching Downton Abbey.
Oh, sorry. So, they did that rematch, those two guys, and they had a good match.
I like how you just, like, turned, you're like, yeah, sorry about that. He ain't be doing nothing. He ain't be talking about spoilers all the time.
I'm trying to explain this thing to you over here.
Don't get mad, bro.
Oh, yeah. So, like, don't be like LeBron over there.
Oh, yeah.
I'm gonna take the high road, okay?
Hey, I have some good news real fast. You know that peacock? It's gone, baby.
What happened?
I just up and left. I was like, screw this, man. I'm out. Okay, so we're talking about Los Ignorables guy.
Yeah, so I watched the match today. And the match they put on today was a lot better of a match than the one they put on the paper.
Who's they?
The same two guys, Dillinger? Ty Dillinger and Almas. So, you know, it wasn't just... Because that was more or less a squash match, right? They just kind of squashed Dillinger. So Dillinger got to get in a lot more offense. The match was good, but... My beef with Almas here is, and this might end up becoming a theme, but and we've talked about it in a few weeks with some of these more tag teams, anything, but finish is just freaking weak, man. And it's like there's two things. Like, his setup move is that stupid ass Rey Mysterio bulldog, where someone grabs his legs and then lifts him up, and then he goes down and he pushes up, and then he turns it into a bulldog. Like, I'm just gonna keep juggling this guy until he hits me with a bulldog, right? And then the guy crawls to the corner, and he does a running it's basically just a Bronco Buster.
Yeah.
But they claim that it's double knees to the head. Yeah. It's like, this is a terrible finish. It's like, that match, you know, let's say that guy does make it to the roster and you want to do something with him. You're going to tell me, like, he's going to beat any kind of legitimate superstar is going to get pinned by that.
And then, by a Divas move?
Right. And a weak Divas move at that.
It's a bitch move.
And if you said little in front of that, it's a little, it'd be okay. Yeah. Okay. But yeah, so while I thought overall, you know, I think there's things to like about him in the ring. It's like, if that's going to be your finish, like, I don't think you're going anywhere.
Yeah, no, I think it was those two spots. You know, first of all, he really didn't wow me. Like, it wasn't like a guy, like, oh, I got to take notice of this guy. And I usually don't watch wrestling like that in the first, oh, I got to look at this guy. But yeah, it's those two kind of weak moves that just, like, whatever, dude, you're dead to me. But then we go into the tag team match with the Revival, mm-hmm. and Kit and Carson. What were those two guys' names again?
Dash and Dawson.
No, well, Dash and Dawson is the Revival.
Okay. Oh, Jason Jordan and Chad Gable.
So, really good match. Wasn't as good as the when Jordan Gable won the belts. I think there was a lot more intensity or for that one. But I kind of knew the Revival was gonna win. But it was nice to kind of it's not that I have a problem with Jordan Gable. It's just kind of I'm a Revival fan, and I guess the best thing I can say about that match was that when Jordan and Gable were getting their offense in, I wasn't like, ah, oh, man, it's like, these guys suck. I was like, oh, you know, it's like, these guys, they know what they're doing. I think Jordan, that's a dropkick guy, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he's fine. He's kind of too vanilla for me. The problem is that they're vanilla. And that's kind of what kind of like, you know, kiss the babies and, you know, shake the hands of the old people and stuff, you know. So that's the only slight problem I have with them. But if they would have won that match, I would be totally happy with them. I didn't care about the outcome because they got their stuff in, Revival got their stuff in, two really kind of different styles. And it was, I mean, it harkens back to like an old, like, NWA tag team match. And I thought it was done really well.
Yeah, I think, so in comparing the two matches, I think, like, yeah, there was something about that first match that was really good. But there were, if you remember, there's like, two, like, pretty major botches,
yeah,
that, like, you know, kind of took away from the match a little bit. Not like you're disappointed, but you're like, oh, yeah, they kind of fucked these spots up. I thought...
But that one spot where the guy did, like, he did the belly to the back, you know, he reversed the...
You're talking about the first match or
the second match?
Yeah.
I mean, when that happened, I was like, what the hell was that? But then when I saw it again, I was like, okay. And then that, I mean, they tried it. It works.
Yeah.
And it wasn't a huge botch, but it was kind of one of these things I'm like...
It looked awkward.
It looked dangerous. Yeah, and I was like, man, that's a pretty dangerous move.
But I thought their finish was awesome, right? The mm-hmm. way that they kind of tagged out and reversed on the on that, like, throwing a German suplex and turned it into the shatter machine. Like, the way they pulled out that shatter machine. Because that's one of the best tag team finishes that's going right now. That could be the best tag team finish in the biz right now. And the way that they pulled that out seamlessly, like, that was a really nice finish. So, yeah, I like both of the teams. I'm a fan of American Alpha because I really like Gable. But I had no problem with that result either. You know, the match was good. Either one of those teams, yeah, I had no problem with them being the tag team champion. You know, I probably would have liked to see American Alpha, like, have a little longer run with that belt, but I cannot complain.
You know, it seems like, especially with, like, the way NXT is right now, it, like, they're not really deep. I mean, I think they have, I mean, it's not like you can have, like, every, like, title defense I've seen, for the most part, really hasn't wowed me. You know, even, like, I think American Alpha, after they beat the Revival, they faced someone, and that's okay, but it's just kind of...
Well, they got jumped by...
Yeah, no, I saw that.
Right.
Yeah, no, but I'm just talking like it was right after after they beat the Revival the first time.
Oh, okay.
And every title match I've seen, it's just, I mean, it's, I think it's not so much maybe they're not deep. It's just kind of a case, like, a lot of it is squash matches, which I'm not used to seeing.
Well, I think that part of it too is, sorry, I think that you're getting this new wave of talent coming into NXT, I think that, you know, some guys have gotten called up or some guys have gone straight to the main roster. And I think that they're now going into the next wave of guys that they need to develop. Like, so if you, so you didn't watch today, but they had a match of, well, for like the guys we were talking about a couple weeks ago, like Ciampa and Johnny Gargano, right? Like they're kind of like a little, something a little higher than jobbers. But I think they're kind of positioning them to be, you know, contenders, one of the next contenders for the NXT titles once they start moving these other teams up. And I think it takes some time. I think there's some talent there with those guys, and I think it takes some time to get familiar with, you know, who they are and what they're going to be on this roster. They debuted another team 2 weeks ago that had their second match today was that TM61. So there was like a small buzz. There's a tag team out of Australia. And there's a small buzz when they signed, saying how like they were this really, you know, really world renowned tag team. But
so much that I never heard of them.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you'd have to follow in like, you know, them going around in Japan or whatever, right? But I'm thinking, okay, you know, we'll see, right? But you know, I've seen two matches of theirs, and they're fine, right? But I think they could be good. I think there's something there. But like, well, yeah, when you're looking at some of these matches, like you kind of know who American Alpha is now. You kind of know who mm-hmm. Revival is. And it takes some time, I think, to build up some of these newer, you know, you talk about, say, like, I don't know, you'd never watched much TNA, but like Eric Young, you know, I've seen him a bit, so I know what he is. But for you, like, even though you've heard the name, you probably never really watched Eric Young before. So like, even that, when they put him in matches, you got to kind of.
Well, that leads into Austin Aries versus Nakamura. And Austin Aries, there were times during the match that I was kind of impressed, but at the same time, it's kind of like, well, I mean, what's the buzz about this guy? Like, what, you know, I think he throws some, I think what he was like doing a ton of elbows and stuff, and he has a nice kind of power based wrestling style
for a really small guy
that throws in, but a lot of it's off of like aerial assaults and stuff. So, I mean, the stuff that he was doing, you know, like the hammers that he was doing off the second rope or the top rope. Impressive. It harkens back to an older type wrestling style, but I think with the performers that you kind of have now, I mean, I've seen better guys do it, and it takes nothing away from him. But I think he needs to find his own style, because I think once he commits to a certain style of what he wants to do, I think he'll be a very good hand. I don't see him ever like being a great hand, but I think he would be like very entertaining to watch. But he kind of needs to develop his own style and figure out what his match is. And I think the other problem too is that you don't put him in his first match, major match against Nakamura, because he's going to be overshadowed.
Yeah, and he's basically gone from Baron Corbin, which was a really tough like debut match to have, you know, just size wise, you know, for getting your stuff in. To tagging with Nakamura for one match to now wrestling against him. I thought it was a really good match. I like Austin Aries quite a bit.
Why did you think it was really good? Because I thought it was a good match too, but I mean, it was at the same time, it wasn't a great match. I think there was a lot of missed opportunities there, and I don't know if it's the time frame, but I mean, it wasn't Sami Zayn versus Nakamura.
No, it wasn't. I don't think it had the spotlight that Zayn Nakamura had either. But I like Austin Aries' offense, right? I like his moves. I like the thing that's good about him is kind of like, you know, not to compare him to Muda, right? But like when he goes and he does an elbow, right? He has that kind of like that gesticulation that Muda had, and it's not like cornball. No, you know what I'm saying. It's not like corny looking.
I know what you're saying, but I don't like it.
Right, but he
can you pick someone else besides Muda? Maybe another guy that throws elbows besides Muda?
No, because
nobody threw a better elbow than Muda did.
I'm not saying that he does, right? Okay. But I'm saying it's like the way that he adds is it's reminiscent of that, like just that elbow, like when he the way he kind of like moves his arms around and gets some height to make it look like. Like that elbow is a little bit more impactful compared to Like, for example, Ambrose, right?
That's a better explanation. Okay, right. Thank you.
Like Ambrose.
Well,
like,
that move that Aries did, outside, you know, jumping outside of that ring against...
His suicide dive was really good.
He did like two of them.
Yeah.
And he missed the third one, but right. those were... I was thinking the same thing. I'm like, man, like now that's a suicide dive.
Right. But even like there was one where Aries did like... he had Nakamura seated, and then he went top rope, and he did like an elbow to like the back shoulder. Like that looked really good. Like it wasn't like the Ambrose standing elbow off the top rope where he just like he points his elbow. But
you're not doing a good job today, right? With Aries, because like when you commend Aries, you're like putting the great Muda in there, which is like, dude, yeah, come on. And then when you want to say like he's doing something, you know, the way he does it, well, it's better than Ambrose. Anybody's better than Ambrose. You know, nah. Ambrose's moveset is like a bitch moveset.
Right, but like even what I'm saying is like within the moves that he has, right? Like he doesn't, like there's nothing that looks like it's forceful, right? And the way that Aries like does, even like they're just elbows. He sells his own offense very well.
The let's just finish up the jury for me right now. Is out on Austin Aries, and that's a good thing. I mean, I'm kind of leaning towards like writing this guy off, but watching that match versus Nakamura, and when the thing with him was that here you like this one, when he's on the offensive, it's very slow, like a very slow methodical pace, and I can appreciate
which is your favorite,
and I can appreciate that.
I'm gonna say one more thing that'll piss you off about Aries too. I'm gonna make one more comparison that you're not gonna like. So the other thing that I'd say with Aries is I've seen the development of his character, right? And he's not really being given a great opportunity to to develop the character that yeah. you know right now, right?
Don't say it, dude.
I am.
Don't say it.
When he was
oh God, don't tell me.
you know who I'm gonna say?
I think
I told you this before when it was happening.
I have an inkling.
But like when it was happening, and when he was like on top of TNA, like in his whole way he was carrying was himself, his promo was very it was along the lines of what CM Punk was. I'm telling you, dude, it was really good. And those guys had like many many battles in Ring of Honor.
You gotta back your brother's play.
I'm just saying, like, so when he was able to kind of like lay out who he was and have like a lot of important stories going around him. Like he was cutting really good promos and that was what made me really like this guy too. Because
you know what they say about that white light? It ain't true. I haven't seen I don't see a goddamn thing. I will give you the benefit of the doubt.
Yes.
Yes. On all this stuff, that's my dishwasher. I'll give you the benefit of the doubt on everything that you're saying because you are more learned in the Austin Aries file of who he is,
right? And I'm not, you know, I'm not saying he's as good a promo as CM Punk. I'm just saying like it was that style that's he was carrying it. Like a lot of what was good about CM Punk was that even though like you know like that he's fighting this uphill battle and trying to you know against John Cena and trying to say like he's the number one guy, but like he carried himself like he was the guy, right? And I think a lot of that was like. Austin Aries, he carried himself like he was the guy, and that made the promo that he was cutting believable. But I will get off of Austin Aries for now.
So let's talk about Asuka and Nia Jax.
So
because I think I kind of know what you felt about the match, but I wouldn't mind to hear you say it.
I thought the match was fine. What I liked. I like that Asuka has that, she has that aggression to her, right? And like that was kind of the thing where I wasn't buying when Bayley beat Nia Jax because, like, she basically, you know,
put her in a chokehold.
Yeah, she basically out-muscled her, which should never happen. But Asuka, like, she got her ass beat for quite a while, and when she was trying to match power with Nia Jax, it wasn't working. But when she went to the strikes, and those last two kicks were vicious. And like I thought it was believable, right?
Yeah, I think, you know, a couple weeks ago I was saying that, you know, Bayley's a great storyteller because of the match that she had with Nia Jax. I think Bayley has a natural charisma to her, and it was kind of one of the first matches I've seen with Bayley. So I was here. The difference was with this one was that like I didn't care if Bayley won or lost. I was kind of like saying like, well, it's not Bayley's time to drop that title because you know they have something hot going with her. With Asuka, I was kind of invested. Like I'm kind of watching this match going like, dude, I'm like, how the f again is Nia Jax going to be overpowered? And what I really liked about that match, because there's some things I didn't like about that match. The thing I did like about that match was that she put Nia Jax in the chokehold, and it only lasted maybe 30, 40 seconds, where when Bayley did it, it was like 10 minutes, or not 10 minutes, but like, yeah. like you know, 2-3 minutes. Yeah, right? Yeah, yeah. 2-3 minutes too long.
Yeah.
The only thing I really didn't like about the match was when Asuka kicked her in the head, you know, or a couple times, and then Nia Jax like looks at her and like yells at the top of her voice, and then Asuka like kicks her right after that, and she wins. It doesn't make sense why Nia Jax would do that. And before I even get to that, I really felt that Nia can carry a match, and the good thing is that she is jobbing, but she is so quote unquote physically dominant that she tells a really good story. It's kind of like, you know, Brock's dominance. It's kind of something similar to that without all the suplexes, and of course, you know, it's Brock Lesnar. But there's the same type of ilk within that match. I think that match would have been better if. So after the match, the trainer went over to her and was like checking her out and stuff, but he was doing that to everybody. But that was a really good sell. Like I didn't know if she was really hurt or not. And I even like kind of looked up online.
It looked dangerous too.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And I looked up online, like Nia Jax injury to see if she was okay. But that's the problem though, right? Like if she would have reacted that way to like the first or to like maybe like the first two kicks where she seems out of it or disoriented. Right. And even like if the ref comes in and like, you know, holds off Asuka and checks on her, you know, and then Nia Jax like pushes the ref, you know, pulls the ref out of the ring, like screams at the top of her voice. That works. But it was too fast, right? It's like kick, kick. And she looks at it and screams at her. I'm like, dude, are you hurt? Or what are you screaming at her for? And then there's that other kick. I felt the potential of that spot, but the execution wasn't there. But mm-hmm. I thought it was a good finish. It took me by surprise. I felt that it was kind of like a kink in Asuka's armor because I just felt like the crowd really wasn't into it that much in terms and it's just it felt Asuka for the first time felt stale and that's kind of the problem that I had not with the match itself but just kind of with the direction that she's going like because I was thinking about like Nakamura you could put Nakamura in a match with anybody. And Nakamura is going to be the star, and he can adjust anybody's style and make him, you know, make the other guy look really good. Like Austin Aries, like he gave me an opportunity to look at Austin Aries for who he is, and I came out of that match going, okay, he has something. I don't think I'll like it in the end, but now I'm going to watch this guy to see what he can do. I don't think it's so much Asuka. I think part of it's Asuka. Like I don't think she relates to people that way. But I think there's also a problem, too, with that Nia Jax is so big that I think she takes, like, the credibility or the believability of the match is kind of somewhat lacking as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's something to be said for that. But I think if I'm comparing the two, like, the way that this match was played out compared to the Bayley match, it was a lot more believable. But I think you also, like, you start to run, if they keep doing this with Nia Jax, then they're going to start running the risk of kind of what they did with Tamina and wasting. Like you had this person that should have been built as this force in the women's division that you just keep jobbing around. And it's not as bad because at least Bayley and Asuka are like top people, but you know, who is she? She hasn't beaten anyone. I mean, well, yeah, she hasn't beaten anybody. Right. So, if you just keep showing that if all she's in there to do is be the biggest, strongest female competitor, and then every single match she's in, unless it's a straight job person, you know, beat them up for 6 minutes and then, you know, get a flash pin or a submission, there's no way she should be getting submitted, then it's going to hurt her credibility in the long run.
And I think she is one of the I mean, I think Kong was probably the most dominant female that I've seen, and she moved the needle a lot. I think Nia Jax can be right there. I think she doesn't plod in the ring. She's not slow. She has some athletic ability for her size. I think she has more than what she's letting on. I think if they give her free reign, see what she can do. I think, I don't want to say she can be a force, but she could shake that division up. I just don't know. You know, they talk about the Divas Revolution. I don't think that her skill set will translate into the WWE because it's kind of like an old story, right? Like super dominant force comes in, runs roughshod, and then can be a champion, but she's really going to set up the next big champion. And after she drops the title, she's not going to be a force anymore. Kind of like Big Show, right? Same type of thing.
Kind of like everybody that goes against Cena.
Well, that's not. I mean, come on. Don't be a bitch right now. So go ahead and so of course Finn Balor and Samoa Joe. All I gotta say is Samoa Joe's entrance music. Stuff is pretty legit, dude. Yeah,
I've been liking that song.
I've been waiting.
It sounds like they kind of played with some Wu-Tang song, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, I like it. I like the little
maybe some little bit of Pheromones in there, you know?
Yeah. That's what it is. But a little bit of Wu-Tang somewhere, and then I like that Godzilla roar that they got from time to time in there. I like that match a lot. I've been really, like, the last few times that there's been, like, a cage match or, you know, the Asylum match or whatever, it's kind of been, okay, you're just throwing this cage in there for no reason. But, like, these guys, it was a good cage match, and I haven't seen a good cage match in a long time. Some pretty good spots there. I kind of thought, I almost had an inkling that, like, there was the point that it was right before the finish. I thought maybe Finn might go off the top cage for a double stomp. And then when Joe went and did the muscle buster off the top rope, I thought, could this guy go to the top of the cage and muscle bust? But, I thought it was perfect. You know, Finn Balor is pretty impressive in that I've seen Samoa Joe wrestle for quite a while, and he's very physically dominant in the ring. And Finn Balor at, what, 180, 190, like, I don't think that he should. It's kind of like the Seth Rollins and Brock Lesnar thing. It's like, just looking at those two guys there, it's like, I'm going to have a hard time believing that Seth Rollins could get in there and beat up Brock Lesnar. But then you see them in the ring together. And you're like, yeah, the way he fights, like, you know, I'm you know, I can buy this. And that was kind of the takeaway that I had, is that Finn Balor, even though he is, like, probably 90 pounds less than Samoa Joe, he can get in there and mix it up with him and still kind of do his stuff and still look legit.
What works for Finn Balor is stuff that I don't like. I don't like face paint. I don't like stupid ring entrances where you're crawling on the ground or even come out with a buzzsaw. But that makes Finn Balor, like, 10 feet taller than he actually is. And so what I'm trying to say is, like, it works, right? Like, him with his body paint and stuff, like, you don't, like, to me, like, I don't see his size. Like, and it wasn't until you bring that up, and I'm like, yeah, you know, the guy's skinny, you know, he's not that tall. But his gimmick, and not even his gimmick, his persona and his charisma, a lot like Shawn Michaels, a lot like Seth Rollins. You know, Seth Rollins is a little bit bigger, but, like, more kind of like, you know, you never really noticed how small Shawn Michaels was because he had so much charisma and it worked for that time. Finn Balor has tapped into something that works for him. It's like he's not trying to play a role. Like he has found his niche as what his character is going to be. I hope he keeps it up when he moves up to the main roster. But that was just a match where you're right. I'm like, I'm watching this match and it's like, so it's a simple story, right? And it's like, because I've seen Samoa Joe a lot in TNA, where he's just like this overpowering guy for like all the cruiserweights, right? Like he's one of these kind of like he can work cruiser, but he's more physically dominant than everybody else. So I was used to seeing like just Joe just like dominate, and he didn't dominate, and it wasn't like Finn. And so Finn had a great match, he had great offense, but he didn't dominate either. It was just like there was no structure to that match, right? It was just like back and forth without it being. It wasn't even back and forth. It was just like. Everything was just really fluid, like, and it wasn't like there was a dead time where Joe was totally dominating, or a point where Finn is like getting his hot tag stuff in, and the finish. You know, it's funny because you talk about like Finn doing something off the top, you know, off the top of the cage, a double stomp. Would that have been great? Of course it would have been great. The muscle buster on the from the second rope, great move. But I'm sitting there going like, you don't need to do that. I mean, you don't need to do that because the match that you're telling is so good. I don't think it took away from it. And I thought it was like that second rope muscle buster, and that was a work of art. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it's like, you know, I'm watching, I'm like, okay. You know, like, yeah. And it wasn't like, oh, okay, all right. I was more like, okay, yeah. I like what they did. I like that, how they had that big spot. But you didn't need that big spot because you guys were telling a great story.
Well, I like it because you're not getting these, like, WWE-style matches where everyone's got a kick out of three finishers, right? And so I felt like doing that muscle buster from the rope, it's more impactful, mm-hmm. and it's legitimate that, you know, he gets pinned and you don't look at it doesn't take away from anything from Finn Balor, right? He just got beat. And I think that's been the good thing with this feud, right? It's like Samoa Joe got beat.
Well, one of the quietest feuds ever too. I mean, you know, but when it's all said and done, it's a great feud.
Yeah. And Samoa Joe got beat, and then he got beat a couple times, and then he came back and he won, and now he sustained that, and now they both move on. So I like it. This doesn't give you that, like, oh, well, you know, typical, like, this guy wins the first match and then loses four in a row thing. And now they've blown that off, and you know what the next feud is now, right?
And they've done things that don't make a lot of sense, but it still works, right? So, like, he wins at, you know, Samoa Joe wins at a house show. And they have a steel cage, but there hasn't really been any interference. Usually, like a steel cage, like old style steel cages, is because there's outside interference or the heel like cheats to win, like bring, you know, gets a chair or gets an inanimate object and takes care of the guy. So like, there wasn't really a reason to have the cage except to have it. And even though storytelling wise, it didn't make any sense. They that was, you know, I'd probably say that's probably, you know, that's probably the best steel cage match I've ever seen, because it didn't have the typical like, oh, I'm gonna climb or I'm gonna jump out of the, you know, the door. It wasn't anything like that. It was like, it was a wrestling match inside the ring. They used the ring to their advantage to get a high point, the climax of the match, and I thought it worked really well. I don't think there's been a better steel cage match in terms of what I've seen. I mean, maybe you can point out like Hell in the Cell, but I think Hell in the Cell is a little bit different.
Yeah. I don't know if I'm willing to say all time, but definitely in the last like 2, 3, 4 years, that's the best steel cage match.
Well, I'm not a big fan of the steel cage match for the reasons I just said.
Right.
I think a good steel cage match was Ric Flair versus Triple H. I thought that was a great steel cage match. But in terms of just like straight wrestling and having like a good like wrestling match inside a steel cage match, that's the best wrestling match I've seen in a steel cage match. Yeah, I like that. Yeah.
That sounds fair. So today on NXT, it ended with they're announcing that Finn and Nakamura are going to be the next feud. So you have that to look forward to.
Good.
And that should be pretty nice.
It should be really good.
Yeah.
It's nice to see two workers kind of go at it. Yeah. Like two men are supposed to.
Get it on that middle of the ring. Right. So I guess I'll finish off on this though. But I guess on the NXT tour, right? They've been having tag matches that are Joe and Aries against Nakamura and Finn, which that would be really cool. I hope that they work that into this upcoming feud a little some way, because all four of those guys, I mean, I think those are about the four best guys they got in TNA right now.
Yeah, I mean, Austin Powers is like CM Punk and Great Muta all rolled into one, right?
Austin Aries.
Oh, yeah, sure.
He's not as good on the mic as Austin Powers.
Austin Powers? Austin Powers is pretty good on the mic. Yeah. So that's how I remember when I'm just joking, dude. That was my fault. It has nothing to do with Austin Aries. Austin Aries, I like you. All right. GOT, Game of Thrones.
The Hound, man. The Hound. That's all I got to say. All
right, cool.
The Hound.
That was one where they showed the preview for the next show, and I was like, God damn it, I got to wait a week for this, so...
Yeah, and it took me a while to figure out that guy was the guy he fought in the cave.
Yeah,
but I got in that, and I just like the whole Hound story is just awesome. And it's like he's a he I feel like he's worked on his promo skills in this time away, because I feel like he's a lot more funny without trying to be funny, like good sarcasm and stuff like that. But the Hound just works. I like that Aria fight. I was really curious to see how she was going to survive getting stabbed and dumped in the river.
I was right. I said it's either going to be Samuel Tarly or the lead actress.
Yeah. So
you know what they're saying about her rival, like the blonde thing. They're trying to
the
say
girl that she fought.
Yeah, they're okay. trying to say that like before this all happened, they're trying to say that Arya's fine because the blonde girl's really Arya Stark, and like she's fight, she, you know, because. You know, they're never seen together, this, that, and this, and, you know, I was like, come on, dude. It's like...
She was Arya wearing the...
Yeah, because, like, so, the two of them were never present together when they talked to the guy with the mini faces, but, I really like kind of how she kind of channeled Florio, you know, when she got Needle, and she cut off the candle. The candle, and I was like... Like Florio did that, like her trainer in the beginning. So right. I really like that.
Yeah, well, I was like watching her run, and then first I'm like, okay, you know, where's she gonna go? And then as I started going through the town, then I was trying to remember, like I was remembering, you know, how like she had hidden Needle kind of like on a stack of rocks mm-hmm. at one point, and then I'm like, is she trying to run to that place where Needle is? And then ultimately, I think. Where she ended up was, that was like where she had slept, right? When mm-hmm. she didn't have any place to stay. And then when she went under that rock and pulled out Needle, I was like, there you go. And then the only thing that...
You didn't get to see it.
Yeah, that was the only thing that was disappointing. You didn't get to see it. The whole thing at River Run kind of pissed me off. Because, and I guess like, you know, I guess like you got to respect the Blackfish, like just...
Yeah, it's kind of a cop out of a character, right?
Yeah, like he's gonna stand on his principles and stuff like that, but it's like okay, like you know you can go walk out right now with an army and go fight, and you choose to just keep that castle, and then a couple hours later you just lose it anyway.
Yeah, I mean the whole thing is that you take that army and you claim back Winterfell. And all of a sudden, everybody's going to start going to your banner, and then you can go.
Then you go back and get River Run.
Get River Run and go farther and get the bridges and even go all the way to King's Court or whatever that thing's
King's
called.
King's Landing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. So then that kind of pissed me off because it was like, it's one of those like stands on principle that goes against all logic, and then even at the end when they're escaping. It's like, you should go.
Yeah.
It's like, that army needs, like, everybody it can get.
Yeah. And,
like, you know, you're supposedly this, like, you know, legendary, like, military figure they could use. You don't, you know, there's no reason for you to just, like, I mean, all your armies, then a lot of them just marched out anyway, right? Go, you know, you can, like, reclaim them and go help Winterfell. And so I just thought, like, I don't know. I just thought that was kind of that was kind of disappointing to me.
That was bad. That was bad storytelling. That was like an easy way. That was like one of the first times. It seems like this season has a lot of easy way outs, right? Mm-hmm. Like they're tying up a lot of loose ends. They're like, well, we really don't have anything, so let's kill him. Yeah, let's kill him. You know, and I'm going like, dude, I'm like, you mean to tell me that I read like 85 pages concerning the Blackfish, and you're just going to like kill him off that easy? It's like, give me a break, dude.
Yeah,
come on.
Go do something.
Yeah, go do
something.
Try.
Exactly, try. So that kind of disappointed me. I like the little scene with the Sellsword and Podrick. I thought that stuff was pretty funny. The Sellsword's hella funny. That's
Bran.
Bran, yeah.
Well, no, it's Bron. Not Bran. Bron.
Yeah, I like Bron. And I like the relationship with Jamie and I keep her name
Brienne.
Yeah, I like the friendship and the respect.
Well, then Bron just like kind of brings it out in the open, right? And he's like, you think they're in there, yeah. You know, And it's like, it's kind of like, because you're kind of going like, are we reading too much into it? Is there something going on there? Because it even seems like Jamie even likes her, right? I'm like, dude, I'm like, what? I'm like, really? And then like, Bron just kind of comes out and says it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, well, I don't think that Jamie likes her in that way.
Yeah.
I think she might have feelings for Jamie in that way, but I think the only one for Jamie is his sister.
Yeah.
But I think he does care about her and respects her. Which I just like the relationship that they have. And then how he, you know, wouldn't let her give the sword back and stuff. I thought that was.
And then it's on for this Sunday for it seems like the showdown.
The Battle of the Bastards is what the episode's called.
This is the Battle of the Bastards?
Yeah. So I read, like, not really a spoiler, I guess it's like a mini spoiler, but that's the name of the episode. And these last two episodes of this season are going to be.
There's still only two episodes left?
Yeah.
Damn, dude.
But they're going to be the two longest episodes of the show. So I think this one's going to be like 1 hour and 9, and then the finale is going to be like 1 hour 20. So, and they said they're going to have like the two biggest wars. Well, that's the other thing too. The way they finished up with those guys attacking Marine, right?
Yeah.
And then I was just waiting for the dragon to show up. So I think that's going to be like a crazy battle.
Well, she did show up.
Right, yeah. I know. Okay. I was just waiting, like, for, because
she's just a badass, dude. Like, she comes walking in, like, man, she's such a badass, you know. And then not only that, but then you also have the tertiary battle, which is going to be, you know, King's Landing. Mm-hmm. You know, so we'll see what happens there, because
she should have walked in and said, "Have I missed a battle?"
Who?
Cersei. No. When the mother of dragons walked in the room,
yeah,
while they're under siege. Have I missed the battle?
What was that from?
Gladiator.
Oh, that's a...
Was that a deep pull?
That's a deep pull, yeah.
You remember, right?
It was
in the beginning when they finished fighting all the Germans.
The Germans?
The Germans, and then they had finally defeated them.
Commodus comes in and says...
Yeah, he comes up after it's over. He's like, have I missed it? Have I missed the battle? It's like, you missed the war.
Yeah, let's not get into Gladiator. All right, so move scale. It's I know what number it is, but we don't do that none.
No.
Don't want none, don't be none. Got my boy Bet Out My Donuts over here on Bad News Ramen. We will probably check you out next week.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Either way.
You've been waiting?
Well, NBA season will be over by this time next week, so yeah. There'll be no more excuses.
No more excuses, yeah.
No. Last chance, no breaks, as Jamal once said.
Yeah, that you don't want to talk about a deep pull. I'm going to see if I can like pull like an even deeper album name pull, which I can't do. Back in business. All right, movie scale number 148. Bet out my donuts on Bad News Ramen. Check that next week.
Never personally.
And in business, I don't know.
Brooktown is Black Moon and Smith and Wesson. Pick up the pace, cause we're right behind your back. The pump got X amount of shots. Take one to your back. Booyaka, Mr. Ripper did the shooting. Cops heard the shot, shit's hot cause they're pursuing. But it's my stomping ground where herbs get blown down. Think of getting caught by beasts, you's a damn clown. Check the drums of death as I break what's left for your face. Cause you're selling out the rap race. Your family cries as your body lies.